And we're back with another chapter of my interview with Arthur Chu. He joins me on the line. He's in the Midwest. We're talking about his reign as Jeopardy champ and his reaction, or the reactions toward him that have appeared on the internet. Arthur, you know, we were talking about the NPR blog, and you said, quote, "I think we've reached the point where someone like me can stand up for myself and say, you know, I'm not ashamed for being the kind of person that I am. And if you try to shame me about it, I'll hit back." It sounds like your reaction to all the negativity that you found on Twitter and in the on the internet has been to be maybe slightly more activist or militant, or how would you describe it?
I mean, one thing that people definitely said is that when Jeff Yang from Jeff Yang did a profile of me a while back, and he said, you know, he called me the Asian thug, you know, like Sherman. The thing is that there's a certain defiance to the way I've approached this that goes against the grain of what people expect from Asian people, the stereotype of Asians being sort of in the background, you know, having a reticent or shy personality. There's a hashtag on Twitter now, "Not Your Asian Sidekick," you know, because of that.
Right.
Trying to fight back against that, be the protagonist of your own story. And, you know, I just, I don't know if it's really my personality in general, but I just decided early on that I could not handle what was going on the internet any other way than to confront it head on, than to like name and shame people and assert some degree of control over the story to say you can't just talk about me and have me sit here like the bullied kid in class. I'm going to talk back. I'm not going to, you know, quietly endure and live up to that stereotype either. And I do think that, you know, part of it is that that shows a different side of me than on Jeopardy, that if what you don't like about me on Jeopardy is that I appear to be a robot or focus entirely on winning and have no personality, then what else can I do but show my personality, you know? And sometimes people don't like you for that either, and you can't win, but I feel like I've done the best job I can trying to manage this reaction and trying to get the positive side out of it.
Yeah, well, tell me, is this different from the way you'd act normally? I mean, in the absence of these tweets, would you have a different view on race? And would you even think race was a much more of a benign thing, or attitudes toward Asian Americans? I mean, kind of come up?
In that regard, I mean, I've learned a lot through this experience, but I haven't had some kind of conversion experience because of this. I had, you know, always, for a long time anyway, been aware of just the fact that when you're a racial minority, certain things happen, but that's the nature of the world. My dad, you know, used to give me talks about how, because I've said that I had ambitions of being an actor or a comedian or performing in some way, you know, and just saying that you're in a country where you can't really win when you do that, that you're not what people expect. They don't want to see you. You're a foreigner. And he tried to talk me out of it, you know, and so I've always had that kind of weighing on my consciousness, sometimes rebelling against it, sometimes getting into it, but it's always there, this voice. You know, I don't blame him for it. He probably grew up with that same voice, too, that there's certain things that you just can't do because you're greatly outnumbered out there. White people are never going to accept you from their own. They're going to want someone who looks like them up there on that stage. And so yeah, that thought was always in my consciousness. It didn't become as clear. I've never been, you know, exposed to the ugly side of it as personally and directly before all of this happened, but it wasn't in that sense a surprise. I wasn't suddenly disillusioned or anything like that.
But there has been a sense of clarity that has made you stand firmer and has made you really stand more boldly toward these kind of things, right?
Well, yeah, I think your best, the best tool in your toolbox, the best weapon in your arsenal is always self-awareness and sincerity whenever you're in any kind of public sphere. So, you know, to some degree, yes, I'm playing a role when I, like, talk smack of a bunch of haters and, like, tweet insults at people who and like play it like a game. But at the same time, you know, I don't try to pretend to have different reactions or be a different person than I am. And so I've never tried to downplay or on the flip side, play up what I see as like racial elements in this whole media conversation. To the extent that I see it there, you know, I talk about it. And I think it's a good conversation to have. It's good to be able to discuss these things openly. I think the worst thing about race in this country, it's not even racism. Racism, I think, in one form or another, has always been with us. But it's the hypocrisy. It's the sweeping it under the rug. As soon as you bring it up, people try so hard to push the conversation away because it makes them uncomfortable.
Right.
But there's so many things, you know, if we can just have this conversation honestly and openly, that's the only way we can make any kind of progress. And I try to have that conversation openly. I try not to be afraid of bringing it up, even if other people won't, you know.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've noticed is that there has been some impact on other Asian Americans, a kind of almost a sense of pride that here is someone who's doing well, who's standing up to this vitriol that you're experiencing. And
I mean, it's just insanity, you know, written, telling us that's written small, not written large, on a smaller scale than insanity, but the same thing. There's been a hunger in the Asian American community for, you know, some kind of hero. And if my playing on a game show can help fill that void, I'm happy to do it. It's, you know, we are a small minority. We're a minority that's, you know, been picked on, and that's worse than picked on, ignored, in the context of larger, more visible minorities getting their place in the sun. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of Asian Americans who the model minority thing is a really tough millstone to wear around your neck, because it makes you feel like you can't complain. You know, it makes you feel like you shouldn't complain that the stereotype is forced on you, because it's not as bad as the stereotypes that are forced on black people or Latino people,
yeah.
You know, that you can't complain about those boxes that people put you in, because it's an okay box. It's not so bad to be a nerd. It's not so bad to be a highly paid engineer. It's not so bad to be, you know, considered really good at school. And even though that might not be as bad as, you know, being Trayvon Martin and being killed because you're assumed to be a dangerous criminal, it's still putting you in a box. Mm. It's still limiting what you can be. And so, when someone breaks that in any way, people latch on to it. You know, Jeremy Lin, people were waiting for so long for someone who was a true, you know, all-American sports hero who was one of them. You know, not someone who was sort of like them, but not like Yao Ming was, someone who was from another country, but an Asian American like me, you know, someone who grew up and got those slurs thrown at him in gym class.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeopardy is not as surprising as basketball, the place for an Asian American to excel, but, you know, I think the way I'm doing it, it's not just a polite Asian kid gets straight A's, but someone who is, I think, even to a degree, the villain image is played out by my supporters, that it's fun to have an Asian who's a thug, who's a villain, who's a bad guy, who is, you know, throwing away convention and spitting in the face of tradition and not apologizing for it. That's exciting.
Well,
you know, it's exciting to be able to identify with that when the stereotype was pushed on you with conformity and you know, staying within the lines.
Well, that is really the whole thing about your way of playing Jeopardy, you know, the game itself. I mean, that's what I noticed, that people were reacting to this, nonconformist style, which I've likened to, Picasso turning the tiles upside down. I mean, it's a kind of a cubist approach to this game.
Well,
and
it's crazy, because it's a 20-minute long game show, and it's a game show that you're playing for a huge cash prize. And so the incentives are, you know, it's the people, like, I called out that Television Without Pity thread when I had my email interview with Ken Jennings. I wasn't expecting him to print the whole thing in full, but he did. And he referenced what I said about this Television Without Pity thread, and then they all kind of circled the wagons and said, oh, he's calling us racist. Well, we're not racists. Let's explain why we don't like him, and for very logical reasons. And what it came down to was, like, he seems impolite. He's not respecting the game,
right. The
gentility of the game. And I was like, there's nothing genteel, necessarily, about, you know, going down the categories in Jeopardy in order. There's nothing that says that that's polite. That's not really a rule. Even if it's just like what most people do, it's what most people do because it seems easier or more normal. But I don't see any logic in saying that this is in and of itself disrespectful. And I would encourage people to like interrogate that, you know, like try to pick that apart. Why does seeing me do this make you feel like someone's doing something wrong or overstepping their bounds? You know, that's not a rational emotion. That's an emotion that's coming from something. It's like, why do people react to like one of the most centrist presidents in history with this idea that he's a radical, destroying the foundations of our government, overstepping his boundaries, ruling like a dictator? You know, why is President Obama a dictator in people's minds when he's one of the most hamstrung presidents by Congress in history? Again, you got to kind of ask, where's that feeling of this is wrong? This guy shouldn't be here. Where does that come from? You know, it comes from a place. And, you know, what rhymes with place is race.
Well, you're helping to expose all this. And, you know, far be it for me to think that, you know, we would have in this game show the place that would help open this up for Asian Americans, this conversation, this race conversation. But it has. And, you know, I applaud you, Arthur. And I know you can't say if you how long you're going to go, but I hope you go on forever.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope so, too.
And, by the way, who are you rooting for on Oscar night?
On what?
On Oscar night.
Oh, I haven't been watching that many movies, I don't know. I don't know. 12 Years a Slave nominated?
I'm sure glad this isn't a Jeopardy question.
Hey, I've been under a rock for a long time.
Hey, listen, Arthur, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
And really, I hope you don't mind if we, you know, if you keep going on, I will keep, you know, just keep tabs and say, well, tell me about why you said Britney Spears instead of Justin Bieber or something like that.
Britney Spears, I literally did not think of Justin Bieber. I think maybe I spent a lot of time trying not to think about Justin Bieber. It's kind of obvious when they said it. But,
yeah. You know. Well, I thought there had been a lot of obvious Final Jeopardy things like Amazon.com. I mean, I thought, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that you've made an old Jeopardy veteran. I mean, I haven't watched it in years, but now I like watching the game again. So good luck to you. And really, thank you very much. And what do you think of Joe Wong? You know, you're a comedian. Uh-huh. Joe, you know, the comedian Joe Wong?
Oh, I'm not familiar.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, another podcast. Hey, listen, thanks again. Okay. And thanks for joining us on Amok.com.